You're listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Visit decentered.co.uk or follow on Instagram and Twitter at Decentered Media.
My name's Dan. I'm one of the founder members of Leicester Lo-Fi, and we're at an exhibition of Leicester Lo-Fi stuff at the moment. It's basically our 10th birthday, so we had an exhibition for our 10th birthday and had all our mates around who had anything to do with it ever, and a lot of their work is on the walls too.
My name's Dave. I'm also a founder member of Leicester Lo-Fi, and there were a lot of people that we'd never met before. They'd heard about it and just wandered in. So that was really nice, because we're always trying to find new members that are interested in photography. So it worked really well. One of the things that's really nice about this exhibition is it's smack in the middle of town. So we are just bringing in people that are just wandering past, didn't know about us, and just say, oh, what's this? Wander in and find us. And there was a couple of women that I were talking to just as they left last night, and they had no idea what on earth we were doing, wandered in because they were interested, and they said, oh, it's so nice, it was so relaxing. The quite like the photographs, because it's not pushing high art, it's people playing a lot of the time. A lot of the photography is just us playing with techniques and just getting people in our community to take photos. And they really like that. They felt really comfortable with it, and they basically wanted to keep here overnight.
If I could just add to that, a lot of people said that they really liked how process-based the exhibition itself was, unlike a lot of other sort of exhibitions where, well, lots of exhibitions seem to be curated really by art historians and people who are history buffs, but a lot of ordinary people aren't actually that bothered about when an artist was born and all of that. We're much more about the process, and we have rigged up a mock dark room so people can see how we actually do things. And all of these plaques before all of the parts of the exhibition that we've put together here, they actually say the process, they actually say the sort of trials and tribulations and traumas and successes of the whole thing that we did, not in an art historical context, more about what people and anybody could have a go at this. We aren't too complicated for anybody. Anybody could have a go at any of these things. And this is how it worked out for the people that did have a go. And anybody else could have a go as well. And once you know how it's done, and we're not secretive, we will actually say how easy some of this was. Or perhaps I should say how simple some of this was, because this really is a process where simple and easy part company, because simple things can be dead, dead hard to actually do well. But we let people know how simple it all is, and that they can have a go too, and they could be part of this. And we encourage people to do that.
10 years ago, Dan and Daryl had been having conversations. They both worked together at Leicester College. And they'd been having conversations about opening a dark room, but never got around to it. And then Steve also started working at Leicester. It's QE College.
I was going to put you right in a bit, but I didn't want to
stop my flow.
Stop your flow.
Yeah.
But
so it's QE College in Leicester.
Wigston and Queen Elizabeth the First College.
This is your story.
My story. Yeah. Me and Daryl, we were working at. We still do work for our sins at Wigston and Queen Elizabeth the First College. He's a photography teacher and I'm a photography technician, but when I started, He was a photography technician as well, and he was just turning into a teacher, and now is a really good teacher. And we would sit in our lunch breaks and say, wouldn't it be nice if we made a dark room and that everybody could go and use the dark room? We could see it was going digital. This is like 2005 when I first started there. And we could see it was all going to go digital. And we, there's a time and a place for digital, and I've got a digital phone in my pocket, like, you know, like everybody else. But we could see how it was all going digital, and we were sad, really, that there wouldn't be a dark room. So we decided, in our conversation, in our lunch breaks, that we would make a dark room somewhere and invite everybody to come and use it. And even if nobody came, we'd use it. But we'd invite everybody anyway and see what would happen. And then Steve Lynch started working there too. And he basically had the same idea. And he was a bit younger than us. And he was basically using this thing that me and Daryl had never heard of. And it was like this internet thing where you could tell lots of people, lots of things, all at the same time, which turned out to be Facebook. Now, me and Daryl had ignored this because it was just some bollocks that the students did as far as me and Daryl were concerned. But Steve, being a bit younger, could see the potential, and he made an event. These were all new words to us. He made an event on Facebook. And, yeah, all these people turned up. A weird and wonderful variety of people, including Dave.
You remember my name?
I remembered
well
your name.
Yeah. So I was a digital photographer, and I get quite techie with stuff. So I'd been putting off looking at film because I knew once I'd started, I would be like, oh, I'm going to buy all the kit and I'll get really into it. And I was sort of like, no, let's not. And then I saw this photo walk with these guys, and I thought, it's time, let's look at film. So I went along to the photo walk, I borrowed a camera from them, shot the film, and had such fun. And I think it was the conversations that went round it. It was like the meeting the people, the conversations, and thinking about what you were doing. And sometimes you're taking a photo, and what it matters isn't the subject necessarily. It's how you take the photo, and then once you work that out, then you can think about what's in front of the camera. So that whole thing got me drawn into coming along to lo-fi. And so there were these three guys running it, and I'm going, oh, me, how about me? Can I join your little group? And eventually, oh, all right, you can join as well. And so, I've been part of it ever since. Since then we've had all sorts of exhibitions, we've run all sorts of workshops, and we've had such fun. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's fun because we one of the things that we started off having little meetings in pubs, and we started doing little workshops and just bring a, yeah, we, you can build a camera or something like this, and then we'd have these meetings, and then we'd have a second meeting amongst ourselves. Basically, we'd get drunk and have stupid ideas, but those stupid ideas are what a lot of the things that we actually did came out of. So it was really nice that you can like free your mind and have silly ideas and then do some of them.
with other people who are being just as silly as you and enjoying it just as much. And actually, that's why we put you on. That's why we made you part of the board. Well, you came to more workshops than the rest of us, so we felt a bit rude to not put you on the board when you were there more often. So we were like, well, Dave's always there. Let's give him the keys to the place kind of thing and put him on the board. Although I'm skipping a bit there because we used to talk a lot about getting a dark room built when we were down the pub, and it took us, oh gosh, how long was it? It was years. We were looking for a place to build a dark room, and that's a bit of an ask because we aren't big spenders. We don't have lots of money, and we're looking for the sort of place that most people don't want. We want somewhere dark but with heating and with water and lights that nobody else actually wants, because, well,
we can't afford
rent. We just can't. So, yeah, we were talking down the pub for at least 2 years about wouldn't it be nice to have a dark room, until we found the first one that we could have, which was at the Manor House. And then we built the first dark room in the Manor House, and then people could start going to the dark room instead of just staying at the pub. Although I have to say, there were some people who did just stay at the pub, even after we'd built the dark room, and then a whole new crowd appeared at the Manor House, coming to use the very first community dark room. And I think we've kept the sign that says community dark room somewhere, like an heirloom. Yeah, somewhere. It's stacked up somewhere. We keep all this stuff, you know. There's something above the collector in us. And that's what this exhibition is too. It's all the stuff from the last 10 years. It's all the stuff from that first conversation in the pub. Let's build a dark room and see what happens. And this is what happened. All I can say is we lead by example. When we're not at work, we simply are not at work. And it shows, and everybody else gets that too. Because lots of people who come to these things, they have jobs that they don't want to think about when they're not there. So they find it quite refreshing to find a bunch of people who want to do something. There's more about us than just being silly, but we can be silly as well, and so can they. But then we can get something, you know, quite credible done all at the same time. So we kind of, I would say, work on all levels. We can be silly, but we put a lot of effort in, and we do come out with really credible stuff, just like anybody could if they keep going for years and years.
I think one of the other things is people think about when they do work, they have to think about being perfection, everything's got to be correct. That misses out a whole important thing, which is play. You only find things that you like to make by playing, by experimentation. And we're all about experimentation. You try something, you have no idea whether it's going to work or not, but that's fine. And sometimes you think, oh, it's going to look like this, and it doesn't, it looks different. And you think, well, there's nothing wrong with that, because you've still made something. And you'll look at it and you think, well, do I like it? You know, it might not be what I intended, but that doesn't really matter. It's do I like it? And a lot of the techniques that you find come from people just experimenting, and things go wrong, and using the things that go wrong, and just letting go a bit of that perfectionism, and just say, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but that's fine. So it's nice, and we encourage experimentation, and just, you know, that there is no simple line of this is the correct to do way to do things. We'll openly say when we're teaching to people, okay, I'm going to teach this way because this is the way I do it. But somebody else here, they'll teach you in a different way, because we all have our little quirks and we all do things in a different way. And that's not wrong. It's just, you know, you just get used to doing it one way. And there's several ways of doing it, which is fine.
I was going to say, I think being part of a group really, really helps there. Because when you're working away on this thing and you've got this grand idea, this is going to look good for this or that reason, and it comes out totally different, well, one of my instincts is to think, oh no, this really went wrong, this is awful, I wish I hadn't bothered, all of that. But there's other people that are there to say, well, because they didn't know what your grand vision in your head was, they didn't know how you intended it to come out, they'll just see a thing that they maybe haven't seen before, and they'll say, oh, well, I like this about it, and I like that about it. And it kind of can redirect you creatively to think about what are the good things about the thing that you've done, and to carry on in that direction. Because a lot of the time when something goes wrong, it doesn't actually mean it's gone wrong, it just means you're not finished yet. It was just a step, and a step in the right or wrong direction is still a step towards a final outcome, towards, you know, being really glad that you did what you did, that you've made what you made, and that, you know, you're proud of it and other people like it. And yeah, the group dynamic really helps there, and it helps in a way, in a sort of logistical and process base that you, if you have to have a dark room, then you have to have people, and the people will talk to each other. The hub, if you like, of the whole thing is that we have a dark room. Since photography's gone digital, people have become loners, I think, a lot more. They take digital photographs and they go home. They take pictures on their own. They go home with their camera on their own. They fire up the laptop or the computer on their own. They choose these pictures on their own. They might put it out onto the internet and think that lots of people have seen them, which they have. But they were on their own the whole time. Leicester Lo-Fi, in a way, is the exact opposite of that. You're not on your own. Other people are there while you make this thing, which isn't digital, unless you take a picture of it with your phone later if you really want to put it on Instagram. But, well, I don't know. I suppose some of us do that. It's not really the point, though. But, yeah, the darkroom is the sort of... It's what the community orbits round, in a way, and it's what makes us come together and be in the one place and, you know, use the place creatively. And then that makes, it just makes good things happen, mostly from the silly little conversations or the little insights that people give you, creative insights into what you're doing. Because I've said a lot about how silly we can all be, but I wouldn't say that we're necessarily lightweight when we're being silly. There is a lot of creativity and a sort of thoughtful direction all at the same time.
There's a couple of things that I was thinking on teaching, when we're teaching people how to do a process that they've never done before. Say they're developing a film. A lot of people come to us. We had a couple people this Wednesday. They came along, can you develop this film for me? And we go, no, you're going to develop it. We teach them how to do it. But one of the things that we quite like doing is, okay, you've learned how to do it. Now teach somebody else. And that, they go, no, I've only just learned. And you go, well, yeah, but you know what to do. And if you teach somebody else, it'll consolidate what you've learned, and also it might show up any gaps in what you've learned, and you suddenly go, oh, I'm not sure about that, you know, why am I doing this, why am I doing it, and then you can go away and ask. So it's deepening their knowledge instantly. The other thing I was thinking of on teaching, when we're teaching courses, we'll give a technique to a load of people. And instantly they'll diverge and they'll all start experimenting in their own way. And you watch what they're doing and you look at it and you think, well, I'm the teacher, but they're doing something that I've not seen before. And you think, that's really good. I'll steal that for my own work. And but that's part of the learning process. And to think of it as like separating the teacher from the pupil is... it's more interesting when that is blurred. It's sort of like one person starts off as being the teacher, but then they're watching what everybody's doing and learning from that. So when we teach stuff, lots of people are making mistakes. We're learning from those mistakes as much as anybody else there. And so we learn the some of the problems that you can get into a lot quicker than if we were just doing it on our own.
You do have to consider that people are all on different levels. Some people have got more time and some people just get it quicker. But when you were asking that question, I had the vision of us sort of like creating a Frankenstein, frankly, that one day goes off on its own and has its own ideas. That's almost like how I see Leicester Lo-Fi. Yeah, we're still there. The founder members are still there and we're still sort of somewhere in the head of the thing going, oh, this way, that way, this looks good, this will be cool, let's do that. But in many respects, it's like watching Frankenstein leave home and hoping that it will just encounter good people. Although I think we have encountered good people. Yeah. Oh, gosh, unique to Leicester.
One of the things that we've seen is the fact that there's two universities. And so we have an odd mixture of old and new members. So we've got like older members who used to do film photography and and want to go back to it. And then there's this other strata of students who have just found this new weird thing that to play with and want to learn about it. So, yes, I think the background of a student community pushes the older community in a different direction. So, like, that odd mixture of old and new learners is quite interesting. And I'm sure any university city would have a similar situation, but it sort of works well. Also, when we keep moving dark rooms, we get a different community. We've gradually moved towards town, and each time we move, the people that come along change slightly. We've got some that stay constant, but others, we just see a whole new community appear from I don't know where. But just moving around a city slightly can change who comes along, which is quite interesting, I think.
I think the internet's helped us out a bit there as well, because back when we started, there wasn't really so much like going onto the internet and finding things out. And a lot of people have actually found us and come to us and just got into the whole Leicester Lo-Fi thing. And we actually don't know who they are. That didn't used to happen. Everybody used to be a mate of a mate. Somebody told somebody told somebody and it all came back to us. But now there's people who live in Leicester who are actually students from like all over Europe, who've just found us on the internet, and they just come along. It's like, yeah, they just know about us, and that's one of the good things about having done this for so long, for 10 years, in the search engine. If you put in Leicester film photography, we crop up now, and yeah, they just come, and they don't have too much money, and they want to give things a go. Well, that's exactly us, isn't it? Because we're Leicester Lo-Fi. We don't have too much money, and we just want to give things a go. And that's what, yeah, that's what we all do now.
We're very much about tin biscuits.
We are a lot about tin biscuits. When we set this up, we had
tin one of that, biscuits. One of our silly conversations was about what biscuits to have.
The thing about that is you've no idea how long this conversation went on. It went on for days. What biscuits do we have? You know, what are the biscuits saying about us? We went into that much detail about biscuits. And actually, you gave me a lift home once. And you were talking about the biscuits all along. And when I got home to Lorna and she said, what did you talk about in your meeting? So Lorna's my girlfriend. And she doesn't call them meetings. She calls them me going to the pub with my mates. But I'm actually saying to her, look, it really is a meeting. We talk about important things. And she asked us what we talked about. And it was the biscuits. What biscuits do we have for the opening night? And then you talked about them all the way home, Dave. And then next time I saw you, you were still talking about them to somebody else. And yeah, okay. So we talked a lot about the biscuits. And at the exhibition, we had tea and biscuits. Okay, so we set up a mock dark room at the very beginning of the exhibition to show what we actually do. Well, to show how we do what we do specifically. Because it is a process-based exhibition in a lot of ways. And this is an analog dark room with the red lights, with the washing line, with the prints on the washing line, the developing trays, the timers, the old cameras. That's a mock darkroom, and that's how everything else was made. We've also got the Afghan box camera here, which is actually a camera and a darkroom combined. You actually put your hands inside the camera where there is trays and there's developer and fix. So you take the picture in the box and develop the picture in the box, and that's what that is.
So 4 minutes later, you've got a photo. So it's as instant as film ever gets, apart from Polaroid, I suppose. And there's only two of these in the UK, really, two running.
Well, Sammy's got one now.
Sammy's got one of our other members, who's now moved to Wales.
Oh, yeah. She got so sick of waiting for us to lend her this, she made her own. So anyway, there's two now. It's at the heart of everything we do, really, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. We get people...
It's hands-on.
Yeah, it's sort of like people say, can you do this for me? And we go, no, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Including getting them, other people, to teach. Okay, you've learnt it, now teach it to somebody else.
This is one of the... I was talking about process. So this is a picture of the tower in Venice. And it looks kind of all smoky and swirly. I took these pictures in Venice, and when I got them back, there was a strip at the bottom of the negative that hadn't exposed. And I was so unhappy about that. I really was having a strop. So I took a cigarette lighter and burnt the bottom of the negative in anger in front of everybody. And then put that in the enlarger. And it looked better than if the camera had worked in the first place. I show that to people to say, if something goes wrong, it hasn't necessarily gone wrong. It just means you haven't finished yet. Think of something else. Do more. And it might be disappointing that you thought you'd get it finished today and now you have to think about it and it'll get done in the future. But think more. Do more. Make it better. Make it better than it would have been if it had been all right in the first place. Which reminds me of one of the very first mottos that me and Daryl had on one of our cards when we began this, but we hadn't begun yet because we hadn't met Steve. And it said, when nothing's for sure, the possibilities are endless. And we really liked the fact that randomness and chaos could lead to creativity if it was edited in the right way. So that we were trying all these things, like making cameras out of beer cans or whatever, then, yeah, it was all about, this may go wrong, but in which way will it go wrong? And let's pick the best way it turns out, which might be more wrong than we thought, because it looked good for some other reason, which leads us to...
Right. This, the whole exhibition really is an exhibition of exhibitions, of the various exhibitions that we've had over the years. This particular one is called the Transient Skyline, and the photos are all solograms, which is... long exposure, which is long being about 6 months exposures. There was a big building being knocked down in the centre of Leicester, and what we wanted to do was put sologram cameras, which are basically pinhole cameras, which are beer cans with a bit of a photo paper in and a pinhole at the front. And we put 20 of these around this big building that was being knocked down. And we put it, put them around 3 months before it was knocked down and then left them for 3 months after it was locked down. So you see this building, but also its absence as well. And it's worked better in some photos than others. They're all a really blue colour. When the photo comes out of the camera, it's sort of a purpley colour, and you don't develop the photo paper like you normally do, you just scan it. They look best when you invert the colours of the image and they come out of this nice blue. In these images you can see a curved line, which is the curve of the sun, and there is an absence of the lines of the sun in some of them, which is where this building was. And in some of the images, you see the sun twice, where the sun was reflected in the building, and then all of a sudden, there's no reflections, and you've got the sun somewhere else. So they all look slightly distorted because some got water damage in them, and yes, you sort of look, oh, that none of them look perfect clear what you imagine a normal photo to look like, but they're kind of ethereal and they're kind of mysterious, and you think, what on earth is going on here, which is exactly what we want, really. So that is the Transient Skyline.
I think a lot of the fun bit of that was actually making the cameras, because if you get a can of Stella, it's exactly the right size to roll a bit of 5x7 paper in, and Do you remember making them in the pub?
Yes, we just made them. I mean, the other nice thing about this project is who were the photographers? Mm-hmm. And you can't say it was one person. It was like all of us. Different people made the cameras. We all banged them up on railings round the building.
Yeah, and so
who is the photographer? Well, no one single
Remy's
person.
The hairdresser was very kind and let us put, well, one of them let us put cameras on their sort of balcony, but actually told us not to tell the other guy, which was actually Remy. So anyway, the story's out now, isn't it? Thank you, Remy. Because it was a numbers game, because a lot of these, because it just looks like a can strapped to a lamppost or strapped to a windowsill or strapped to a wall, and some people kick them around.
Yeah, we had one. We put them on some grilling of a window of a solicitor's, and the solicitors asked us to take them on because they thought it was a bomb. And you know how it could possibly be a bomb. We actually put a little sticker on saying this is an art project, but they got worried about it for some reason.
They did, but I think we might be the only nerds in town that thought it looked more like a camera than a bomb, because I think if you asked most people, is this A, a can with gaffer tape, B, a bomb, or C, a camera, I don't think camera would... I don't think most people would think it was a camera at all.
They're not cans, they're potential cameras.
Well, that's how we see them.
Some of them are like group efforts, but there's a couple of these that are really our own projects. One is Dan's project and one is my project.
This project here and this exhibition is called Danagrams, or at least it's called Danagrams now. At the time it was just called the Paper Negative Project. So one of the meetings, and they really were meetings, that we had in the pub, we were talking through some ideas for workshops, and we'd got to the last one, which means we'd drank the most at that point, and we were saying, right, we've got to have at least one batshit crazy idea. That was your words, if I remember rightly. And I said, okay, I'm going to make some negatives out of paper and just see what happens. And this Danagrams exhibition was born of that workshop. So there was me and a few others, Bibi, Bob, Linda... are some of the people who are up here. Oh, and my girlfriend Lorna, she had a go as well. We all did a workshop where we did Danagrams, and what it is newspaper put directly into the enlarger, and a print is made of that, and the print is of both sides of the newspaper page printed equally onto one image, so you get the text on one side and the picture on another, and the text and the picture does not match. So we've got love songs, jazz and muffins written over Nigel Farage's face, for example. Those words would not go with that image, and that was kind of like my point. My point was, why do we accept certain words with certain images easily, and other words with other images we find jarring and sort of don't agree with them? So I was playing with that idea, and I did my workshops with that in mind. And as Dave was saying earlier, other people have other ideas. They do things differently, and it makes it really interesting. The other guys, they just did it differently. Some of them were more visual. Some of them didn't bother with text. Some of them did. But I was really happy to see everybody carry on with their own version of these Danagrams. And the word Danagrams, I wasn't vain enough to call them Danagrams because I'm Dan, and Man Ray called some of his photograms Rayograms until everybody just started calling them photograms. So it was kind of like a joke about that. It really was a joke, and yeah, I wasn't vain enough to call them Danagrams myself, but when other people called them that, I definitely was vain enough to go right along with it, and I still am. And these images are from the first workshop that we did, but none of them are actually from that workshop. It's what people did afterwards, which is something else that I really like about Leicester Lo-Fi. We will do a workshop where we show people how to do something, and then people carry it on after. So it's not just the workshop. It's not just the results of the workshop. The workshop was just where you learnt something, and then you keep going to Leicester Lo-Fi and do the thing that you've learnt. absolutely none of these images are from the very, very first workshop. They weren't that good, but people rolled with it. I rolled with it. I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to carry on, which I think alludes to something that Dave said earlier. We have these crazy ideas. You do this crazy whatever thing that you only said because you were part of a group and people were kind of like egging you on to be creative or do something. And then, in my case, you find yourself 2 or 3 years down the line doing the thing that you said in the pub that you kind of said for a joke, but actually you got into it. And so I carried on, and then the other guys were carrying on as well, who'd done the workshop, and actually showing other people how to do it. Because Sam did a few and called them Samograms. But yeah, another thing that I like about Leicester Lo-Fi, people carry on after the workshop. Not only that, but the people who did the workshop showed other people how to do the thing that they'd learnt on the workshop. And for what it's worth, we are not precious about being the originator of a thing. We want it to be copied. As far as I'm concerned, there's basically 2 ideas in this world: rubbish ideas that nobody copies and good ideas that everybody copies. So if everybody copies you, good. So I'm thinking, great, copy away, get going. Let's have a massive exhibition when you've done loads of copying of this thing. And that's basically what this bit is. For me, this was a real nod to the whole history of photography, because the very first negatives were made of paper anyway, which is why they looked ghostly. And these are paper negatives. And then newspapers promoted photography massively in the 70s. Well, actually, you could go back to the picture post in the 50s. But documentary photography kind of happened the way it did because of paper and newspapers and the printing process and people buying magazines. So there's that part of the history of photography involved in all this. And what we're doing here is kind of like messing with image and text, which made me think of Barbara Kruger and Staatsäger, who was messing with images and messing with text. So it brings it all right up to date. To me, there's a nod to the whole history of photography and art in this, as well as it being a silly idea in the pub. So it kind of works on every level to me.
Well, these images here, this group of images, are part of a workshop that I developed called Luminograms. Luminograms are basically playing in the darkroom to create an image, and all you're using is light and manipulating that light. So it's not a photograph of something. You're just pointing and shoving the light and affecting a piece of photographic paper. So the light sources I used were enlargers and also a little torch, and I've also got this fabulous laser, which sounds really high-tech, and I use it in a really low-tech way. It's got this tiny little prism on the front, so you get lots and lots of little lines coming out from it, and I love it. It's great. So over the course of a couple of months, I worked out how on earth to do these luminograms, because I thought, as I'm teaching it, I really ought to learn how to do it. I chose luminograms really because it's an alternative technique, photography technique, that isn't done that much. There's one famous chap in the UK that does luminograms called Michael Jackson. No, not that Michael Jackson. And other than that, you don't really see them. So I thought, yeah, let's have a go at these. I found these interesting because, for the first, I'm a photographer by trade. And so to find a composition, I basically hunt and find the compositions. That I found these tricky because I had to create that composition myself, and which is a new thing to me. So there was 2 levels of learning I had to do. One is play with these lights to create things that looked interesting. So we've got little splobs, and I use lenses to distort the image, and pieces of glass and cardboard to mask, so I can create greys, blacks, whites. But once I've got these blobs, it's all right. I've got a blob. That's not very much very interesting its own. How can I make this into a composition? So I went through this whole learning process before I then taught it to somebody else. So it's really nice that having to teach somebody, I have to learn quite a lot myself, and gone way out of my comfort zone, really, learning what compositions I could do and what I liked. And I'm still really going through that. So these images, some of which are nice, simple little splobs of light, and others are complex building up of lots of little lenses, and you get lots of detail in them. And I've gone through a whole thing where I find they're absolutely fascinating to make, and I can lose hours in the darkroom just playing with different pieces of glass, and then I teach this course and everybody goes, wow, this is great, and then I go, oh, let's steal that idea from them, let's steal that, you know. So it's great, love it. Luminograms.
So the question I've got for you both then is,
I think that word trust, and it's that's learned from experience. The fact that you trust yourself to be able to find something in the end, and that when you start off, you have no idea whether you can eventually get to it. But you've messed around and come out of the end with something often enough to trust yourself that you can do that again. It's changed the way I work, and one of the things that I quite like is, as a day job, most of my stuff is digital, but film photography has changed the way I take photographs digitally. It's altered how I edit black and white films, for instance, but it also altered this thing of trust, of experimenting and knowing that something can come out of it, even though it's not a fixed, you know, we will do this and this, and it's letting go. When I photograph digitally, I love serendipity. I love, right, this is the plan. Well, actually, when I do a shoot, I go plan, wing it, and that wing it is so important, because that's where the magic happens. It's you've got a plan, you don't stick to it because something more interesting might come up. Serendipity is so important, and you've got to know, because you're planned, you know what's right. You've got an accident happened, and you think, is that accident, does that fit with what I'm doing or not? And do I go in that direction or not? And you think, yeah, let's play, let's let go of all that planning and go in a different direction because it fits what's needed.
I would go along with all of that. For me personally, I would say the way it's changed me is to make me, at the very beginning of a project, how can I put it? You have to be drawn to something. Something has to make you want to do something. And I think a lot of people don't get any further than that because they overthink it at the beginning. And they think, oh, why do I want to do that? Maybe it won't work. Maybe it will. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. I would say forget all that. If you want to do something, whatever the reason is, pursue it and kind of find out why you wanted to do it while you're doing it. And don't worry about why that actually is. Don't worry about what that might... Don't even think about what it might say about you. Just do it because you want to do it and see where that leads you. And yeah, as Dave was saying, it does lead you into places that you wouldn't necessarily have gone. And it does actually say things about you that you didn't know it would say about you. To take what I did, the Danagrams, as an example, I actually think I started out by using bits of newspaper and bits of text because I was trying to make myself invisible as an artist and just use things that were already there. And almost as if I was frightened of my own voice. I wasn't using my own text, I wasn't using my own images, I just nicked the whole lot from other newspapers. But I say other newspapers, it all comes from The Observer, and all of a sudden that says something about me, says I'm a bit of a lefty, says I'm a Remainer, says I'm, you know, identify as being woke, whether I am or not. That's what that newspaper says, and all of them come from that newspaper. So before you know it, you're exactly visible, no matter what you do. But, on the other hand, don't worry about that at the beginning. Do something because you want to do it. Worry about it later when you've actually got something to show for yourself and got something to talk about. And who knows, you might really enjoy saying how you got to that place, because it's all about the journey. It's all about how you got there. Same with any piece of art. A picture's just a picture if it doesn't have a story, but if it's got a story about it, then that makes it, that's the creative process, is what makes the outcome creative. So the process has to be creative. There has to be a story, there has to be a reason. And you can't help but have a story if you keep on doing something for years and years. Things will come out, things will develop. So I've learned to kind of trust that. Trust that the process and me will become visible along the way, but you don't have to know what that is at the start. The plan, I think for me, planning's a weird thing. For me, part one, section A of any plan is change the plan if you have to. That's how my plans start. And then you can make all these plans, but all the plans that come under part 1A of your plan, all of the other plans are really just an expression of your enthusiasm that you want to do something, basically because you want to do it. The plan is secondary. Remember the enthusiasm, remember the feeling, and just get out there and do something.
So the exhibition is in Leicester. Oh, where on earth were we? Okay, so we're at Leicester. I'm going to get a sheet because for 2 weeks, we're in Leicester Contemporary, which is on Market Street, Leicester. And the exhibition is on from the 4th to the 18th of December. We're open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day except Mondays. I think that's all that. Yeah, and anyone can wander in and have a biscuit.
Well, if there's any left.
Yes, there might be some biscuits. We might have
sooner
stopped
the better, because we're going through these biscuits.
Social media, yes. We, Leicester Lo-Fi, are on Twitter and on Instagram. I am just looking at where we're so rubbish at this.
Well, you just Google it.
Yeah, just Google Leicester Lo-Fi and
we don't even know anymore because we've been putting stuff on for 10
we
years.
We are so organised, and we're on there, and we'll get around to it eventually. On our Twitter, our Facebook, and our Instagram, we're somewhere on there.
Or,
also, yes. Now this bit we do know how to do. Our dark room is open every Wednesday night from 6 until 9 p.m., and then we go to the pub. And anyone can come along. If you're interested, just come along and have a chat and see if you like us or not like us. Come and have a cup of tea and come with the film and we'll show you how to develop it or just chat to people.
And that's at the chapel on Bishop Street.
I thought I'd let them know where it is because
it's not just in internet land. This is actually a real place, just around the Town Hall Square in Leicester.
There will be biscuits
if you get there soon enough. Yes. But it's best to bring your own if you want.
One of the things is the door will be shut when you get to the dark room. But there's little A board outside with the doorbell on. Just press the doorbell, and we'll try to remember to come up and let people in.
And that's because we live in the basement of the church, where we've been given a bit of a space quite cheaply, thank God. We can actually afford it. And I think they've forgotten about us, you know. We just keep on giving them the bit of rent that we give them, and they don't seem to mind us being there. And, you know,
we sort of do our own thing.
They did plan for a lot of artists to end up there, but we're the only ones who bothered.
We pinched their tables to make this exhibition, and they haven't noticed.
They haven't noticed, bless them. But I think they're just glad someone's there, so, like, if there's a leak or something, someone will notice. And we do give them some money.
Yes, we do give them some money. Yep.
So, yeah, when you get to the entrance, it's actually the entrance to the chapel, and you press the bell, and we come up from our little place in the basement up the stairs through the corridor, and we will open the gate for you and guide you down to the basement.
And be welcoming.
Yes.
You've been listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. To find out more, go to decentered.co.uk or follow on Twitter and Instagram at decentered media.